this is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
Welcome to the Indie Media Show on RTRFM 92.1. My name is Raymond Grenfell. Also got a new guest in the studio I'll introduce in a second. But up first, a huge thank you to Jeff Bullen for another excellent edition of On The Record. It's always such a pleasure. And also big ups to Jeff for filling in for us last week on Indie Media. He's had his eye on Indie Media for a while. His eye or his ear on Indie Media for a while. And I get the feeling he's, you know, eager to jump on board. So, you know, would welcome it, Jeff, you know, anytime. So yeah, but massive respect and love to that man. And also, huge respect to Brianna for the news. She'll be back at 12 o'clock with more RTRFM news. As I said, though, this is the Indie Media Show. If you're tuning in for the first time, it's all the news, interviews, and occasional opinions from the interwebs, the open publishing wires. As I said, my name is Raymond Grenfell, also joined by regular co-host Brahma, my dog, with his silent telepathic, you know, vibes that are coming throughout the show, but also who may not be so silent this week. We've got a new contributor to Indie Media, Brent. How's it going, Brent?
Good, Ray. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. Thanks very much for coming in and getting involved in Indie Media, becoming the media, all that kind of thing. I imagine you'll bring some, you know, energy, newfound input and all those kind of things.
Yeah, I hope so. Really excited, and it's good to be here.
Awesome.
Be nice to share some stories and some of the things I've found around on the interwebs.
Totally. On this week's show, it's a bit of, I guess you could say, a bit of a special in terms of looking at the impacts of mining in Australia and around the world, or at least Australian mining companies, and some of the, I guess, the ways they operate, or the fact that they tend to operate with a bit of impunity. Up first, we're going to be talking about a situation unfolding in Buenos Aires, not Buenos Aires of Argentina, but Buenos Aires in northern Ecuador, as the community there for some time has been peacefully resisting an Australian mining company that wants to mine gold and copper in their mountains. There's been a whole bunch of stuff happening, but ostensibly local people are complaining that Hanrine, what is a subsidiary of Australian company Hancock Prospecting, if that name sounds familiar, it's Gina Reinhart is the majority shareholder of Hancock Prospecting, and therefore Hanrine. They've been trying to get into the community for some time, despite our local opposition from both the local people, but also local elected members in the Ecuadorian region. A third of Ecuador has been ostensibly handed over to mining fairly recently, and this is despite Ecuador having one of the greatest sort of levels of biodiversity and very sort of pristine environment. But local people are resisting, and unfortunately this has sort of come to a head with the federal government deploying the military and police and so forth, and there's been quite a lot of violence there in Buenos Aires in northern Ecuador. So a little later in the show, we're going to be speaking to Liz Downs. Liz is a part of a group called Rainforest Action Group. They're based over in Melbourne, trying to act in solidarity with people who are defending their local lands, particularly obviously rainforests. We're also going to be catching up with Anthony Watson, who's from the KLC. There's currently in WA, there's a new bill being proposed, the Aboriginal Cultural Heritage Bill, that's being proposed by the state government here, that would place a lot of the decision-making in the hands of mining companies. A whole bunch of land councils, including the KLC, are understandably opposed to this, and so they're getting together to voice their opposition to the state government's draft Aboriginal Cultural Heritage Bill, and try and argue that Aboriginal people should be involved in any sort of process that involves mining on their traditional lands. So an important show today on Indie Media. We hope you can stick with us. But to kick things off first, we're going to go to a track by local legends Bex. This is their track, Hold Tight. You're on RTRFM 92.1, The Sound Alternative. And you're on the Indie Media Show on RTRFM 92.1 with Ray, Brent and Brahma. As I said at the top of the show, the community of Buenos Aires in northern Ecuador has been facing a long struggle to try and resist Hanrine, a subsidiary of the Australian company Hancock Prospecting, from conducting gold and copper mining on their lands. The local indigenous people there have been peacefully protesting for some time, trying to stop this company from operating on their lands. Unfortunately, in recent months, this has escalated with the federal government deploying military, and there's been a severe and quite brutal crackdown on the protesters there that are resisting Gina Rinehart's mine. And this actually resulted in one of those local people being stabbed quite recently by some of the paramilitary or military, or even some of the miners themselves. That is currently unclear. However, what is clear is that the people are very much determined in resisting this mine. To find out more about the situation, I had the opportunity to speak to Liz Downs. Liz is a member of the Rainforest Action Group, who are acting in solidarity with the people of Buenos Aires and Ecuador and elsewhere in the world where indigenous people are resisting, mining and other impacts on their native lands. And I started by just asking Liz exactly what was going on in Buenos Aires and what was the, proposed activity that Hanrine would like to conduct in the area.
This company, Hanrine, it has 5 concessions in Ecuador. I should just start actually by saying, just covering briefly the overall picture of Australian mining companies in Ecuador. Australia is one of the biggest investors in this small South American country for copper. And that copper's mainly going to be for the renewables transition. So it's, the copper price has gone up crazily in the last couple of years because of its demand. So a few Australian mining companies are in there. Of course, about six or seven different companies. One of these is Hanrine, which is a subsidiary of Hancock Prospecting, meaning that Gina Rinehart owns majority shares in this company. It's privately listed, so you can't find it anywhere on the stock market. They're basically one of the competitors in this region, which is also one of the most biodiverse regions in the world and has communities and indigenous people who haven't given consent for that mining.
And so there has been a significant amount of resistance to the mining operations, and even from some local elected officials and, of course, the townspeople themselves. Can you tell us a bit about that resistance, and how long has there been a movement in opposition to Hanrine's proposed activities?
Cool. So Hanrine, like most of the other, in 2017, about a third of the total landmass of Ecuador was sold to various transnational mining companies. So Hanrine was part of that concession, that wave of companies coming in and snapping up land. And the conflict started pretty much straight away when, because there, as well as copper in that region, there is gold. And as soon as Hanrine announced that there was potential to be exploration for gold and copper, there was a kind of a gold rush. So there was a lot of illegal mining came suddenly into the area. There was bringing with it organised crime and all kinds of other nasty things. Gina Rinehart was not very happy about this, having all this happen in her concession, so they got the Ecuadorian government to send in the military and clean out all the illegal mining, which also caused a lot of disturbance for their local communities, who are mostly farmers, who are trying to, cope with all this descending on their land. In April this year, So, yeah, last year was a bit of a non-year for mining because of COVID. But this year, Hanrein decided it wanted to come in and start explorations. So in April, the community had been resisting the mining quite publicly prior to that. So Hanrein decided that the best way to come in would be to block the road, the only access road in and out of the community, which is a very steep, winding mountain road. If you can think, this is in the, you know, the high Andes. It's incredibly precipitous country. Access is really difficult at the best of times. So they set up camp. They blocked the road with their mining vehicles. They camped by the side of the road and wouldn't let anyone in and out until the community said they could enter. So, yeah, so that happened, and then the community got a whole bunch of human rights organisations on board, and they made an appeal, and they asked for a legal injunction, which ruled that the mining company had to leave because they were committing human rights violations. The mining company didn't leave. They unblocked the road, but they stayed camped in the area, and then last week it all kind of got to a head when they tried to force their way into town again to basically, you know, create a depot for their exploration activities. And, yeah, there was some violence and a community member got stabbed. And it should be added that the community have been doing peaceful resistance. There wasn't any violence whatsoever towards the mining companies or to police. And then 3 days ago, which is what kind of precipitated our latest kind of desperate urge to get media out on this, was that Hanrein again tried to enter, and they hired 500 armed military police with tear gas. And so these police then tear gassed the residents of this town of about 2,000 people who were basically just kneeling on the road praying at 3 a.m. in the morning. So, yeah, that's pretty much...
I mean, it is absolutely shocking to hear, and I guess for many of our listeners, unfortunately, though, they perhaps won't be shocked knowing that some of these mining companies act with such impunity, particularly in places where they feel like they can get away with it. You did mention there have been some, wins in sort of Ecuadorian courts. What sort of measures beyond on the ground, the people, you know, quite bravely resisting these, this barbaric sort of attack on their land or on their town, whatever means have activists and locals been taking to try and stop Hanrein from conducting this mining operation?
Cool. So at the moment, the main thing they're doing is they're trying to get into the Human Rights Commission of the National Assembly, which made a visit actually on Friday. We haven't heard back about that yet, but they visited the town of Buenos Aires and just, you know, did some documentation. They're making videos. They're trying to get human rights organisations all over the world actually, to not just in Ecuador, to take notice, because it is... it's a situation that unfortunately is becoming increasingly emblematic of these mining companies that are so desperate to come in and take land and do this with absolutely no consent, and sometimes in quite violent ways because of this, you know, incredible rising copper prices. So, so that's basically, and they've been asking, I mean, we're the sort of, a bunch of Australians that they're in contact with, so they've been asking, look, you know, get it out in Australia, like let the Australians know what's happening, because you know, we need to know what our mining companies are doing here overseas, you know, and there's very little oversight of that, which is another story. And the other way, which hasn't been done with Hanrein yet because it's also kind of new, but nearby in this region, there have actually been some community mobilisations around legal cases, and these have been around the rights of nature, which is in Ecuador, in the constitution, biodiversity has constitutional rights. And this is a very interesting legal tool that is being used at the moment against a couple of other mining companies in that area.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because I guess, you know, the horrendous human rights violations aside, I imagine Rainforest Action Group and, of course, the local people that are resisting are also primarily concerned with the impact it will have on the Ecuadorian environment. You mentioned at the start of this interview that a huge portion of Ecuador is being set aside to mining concessions. Can you just talk, a bit to that? What exactly is at stake here in terms of the potential impact on the Ecuadorian environment and on the biodiversity and some of the endemic species that exist?
Yeah, so Ecuador's got some kind of parallels to Australia, I guess, in that it's got this really, really rich biodiversity and endemism of species, meaning that, you know, there's species that are found in, you know, one 2 kilometre square area and nowhere else. So, you know, they've got Ecuador actually is the world's richest biodiversity in the world per hectare, given it's on the equator and has, you know, the Andes and all the rest of it. And the other parallel to Australia is that Ecuador actually has a high population of indigenous people. So indigenous rights are a big thing in Ecuador, not that, you know, the government necessarily upholds those, and particularly not in the case of mining at the moment, but indigenous people do have a strong voice, and that's something that is being used not only as a legal tool, but also as an example for other areas of the world where we've got this kind of land grabbing going on, which including obviously right here on this continent. So, yeah. There's a couple of main things there, culturally and biodiversity-wise, that are significant for Ecuador.
I think fundamentally, Liz, these mining companies have acted with such impunity for so long that they really do feel like they can get away with anything. And this seems to be a very clear cut case in that regard, especially, you know, these sort of the human rights violations and just the amount of land they have access to, and often in many cases, and I'm sure in Ecuador, they often will get this land relatively cheaply and still exploit all of those resources to make a lot of money out of it. What do you think this kind of particular example says about the ways in which mining companies are dealt with, particularly Australian mining companies, and I guess particularly in this context where while we're dealing and recovering with the COVID-19 crisis, our federal government is really pushing for this, you know, boom in the resources sector and giving many concessions to mining companies, and this seems to be happening everywhere in the world. Well, what do you think it says about our Australian and also our global relationship to these companies and just the insane levels of impunity that they are given?
Yeah, exactly. It is insane. It's particularly with this green resources boom. I mean, we've all got to get to net zero. Everyone's aware of the Paris Agreement, except, you know, maybe our government. but, you know, what even our government agrees on is that how Australia is trying to meet net zero targets will be through the mining sector providing minerals, both in Australia and overseas, for the green, clean energy and renewable sectors, which we obviously need, you know, to have renewables, but that comes at a massive price. And so it's really only starting to become on the radar of particularly sort of starting with activists, NGOs, local people on the ground going, oops, we've got mining companies coming in and suddenly grabbing our land and for these renewables. And the problem is that the existing problem we have in Australia is that there is very little oversight for, as I said before, for mining companies overseas. We've got an OECD national contact point where you can, you know, lodge a complaint against a company's actions, and it can be measured against the OECD's guidelines for the responsible corporate behaviour, basically. And these are, you know, okay, but they've got very little teeth and certainly no legal teeth. And, you know, Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade has sort of guidelines as well. But really, a few colleagues I'm part of a group of colleagues, actually, that we've been talking lately about the need for a kind of watchdog, particularly because the stuff in Ecuador is coming to a head now. But it's obviously not just Ecuador, it's Papua New Guinea, it's the Philippines, it's Malaysia. To try and sort of map what is going to be happening over the next couple of years with, you know, where these companies are going, what impacts they're having, in terms of human rights and the environment. Yeah, so it's kind of going to be a big job, I think.
Totally. And I guess just finally, Liz, I guess talking about a big job, I mean, in regard to this particular Hanrine mining project in Ecuador, it's quite difficult, I guess, for people over here in Perth to know exactly what they can do. But what can people do in terms of trying to at least highlight the issue or try and do something to ensure that at least Hanrine knows that people are aware and do wish to stand in solidarity with the people that are being affected?
Cool. Okay, so we have we're called the Rainforest Action Group. You can Google Rainforest Action Group, and it will bring up our website. We've got all our media releases on there. You can check out those media releases. We also have a Facebook page called Rainforest Action Group Melbourne/NARM, NARM, which is the Indigenous name for Melbourne. So you can go on there. We're always putting out social media. We just need people to keep sharing that social media. We don't have the human power really to do a campaign on this at the moment. All we're doing is just kind of putting out media releases, and we're just building our contacts at the moment. So if anyone has any contacts or they feel like getting in touch with us, just send us a message. And we also have a petition at the moment for the specific Hanrine issue in Buenos Aires. So hop on our Facebook page, like our Facebook page. You'll find posts with this petition link, sign that. That'll go to the Ecuadorian organisations that are trying to organise a more sort of national profile for this issue. Yeah, and that's pretty much it at the moment. I mean, I wish we could say we had this massive campaign that people can join, but I think it really depends on other people's sort of, and particularly people in West Australia, because most of the mining companies that we're dealing with are based in West Australia or have operations there. So we are really looking for allies, also stories of what these companies are doing in Western Australia on Aboriginal lands and other things, so that we can tell the Ecuadorians that, because, you know, then they're armed with information that they can use as to how these mining companies operate.
That was Liz Downs from Rainforest Action Group. They're based out of Melbourne, and you can find out more information by going to rainforestactiongroup.org. She was speaking to us about the unfolding situation in Buenos Aires, the small town in northern Ecuador, where one of a subsidiary of Hancock Prospecting, the company Hanrine, are currently trying to push in and do a bit of mining there and violating a whole bunch of human rights in the process.
You're listening to the Indie Media Podcast, first broadcast on RTRFM 92.1.
This is the Indie Media Show with Ray, Brent and Brahma. And it's now time for a bit of Indie Media news. In Greece, thousands of people have fled their homes on the outskirts of Athens as firefighters from across Europe join crews battling blazes that are threatening the Greek capital. One fire nearly reached the ancient Olympia archaeological site where the Olympic Games were held for over a millennium. And the Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis blamed the fires on climate change.
A new study in the Journal of Nature finds that human activity could soon cause a crucial Atlantic Ocean current system to collapse, with devastating impacts on the global climate system. Researchers found the ocean currents that carry warm water from the tropics to the North Atlantic have already been destabilized by the climate crisis. A complete collapse would dramatically change rainfall patterns around the globe, lower temperatures in parts of Europe while raising them elsewhere, and would dramatically raise sea levels in the eastern United States.
And in more climate news, in northern Lebanon, crews battled wildfires for a fifth straight day as the blazes spread into Syria. Elsewhere in the Mediterranean region, Turkey has been hit by its most intense fires on record, with one blaze breaching a coal-fired power plant in southwestern Turkey. Large swathes of Greece and Albania faced very poor air quality amid a searing heat wave fueled by the climate crisis, with wildfires kicking up huge quantities of fine particulate matter.
And in the United States, congressional Democrats have drafted legislation that would tax major polluters to compensate for the impacts of catastrophic climate change. Polluters Pay Climate Fund Act would raise $500 billion over a decade by taxing companies like Chevron, Shell and ExxonMobil based on percentage of their global emissions. The fund would help pay for green energy research and help communities adapt to a warming planet.
And in other news, protests in Lebanon last Thursday marked the fifth anniversary of one of the largest non-nuclear explosions in history, the Beirut port explosion that killed at least 218 people, injured 7,000 and destroyed or damaged 300,000 homes. So far, no one in the political leadership has been held accountable for leaving over 2,700 tons of highly explosive ammonium nitrate fertilizer unattended at Beirut's port. And in Guatemala, a new anti-corruption prosecutor has been appointed following the abrupt firing last month of Juan Francisco Sandoval, who was forced to flee the country. The new appointee has been accused of prosecuting Guatemala's political opposition and of protecting the corrupt elite. This comes as protests continued across the country last week, demanding the resignation of far-right-wing President Alejandro Giammattari and Guatemala's Attorney General. And finally, the United Nations Security Council is holding an emergency session to discuss the crisis in Afghanistan. This comes as Taliban fighters are attempting to seize three provincial capitals. Last Wednesday, a UN spokesperson said the fighting has left thousands of Afghans trapped or fleeing for their lives. This is the Indie Media Show on RTRFM 92.1. Up soon, we're going to be chatting to the chair of the Kimberley Land Council, Anthony Watson, about the proposed Aboriginal Heritage Cultural Bill here in WA. But right now, we're going to go to a bit of the Silvermount Zion Orchestra. And this is Microphones in the Trees. You're on RTRFM 92.1. Now, if you've been listening to the entire show, as I said at the top of the show, it's a bit of a, I guess, a special on some of the operations of mining companies here in Australia and also elsewhere in the world. Earlier today, we were talking about some of the operations happening in Ecuador. But of course, mining companies have a huge impact on our country here in Australia, particularly on Aboriginal lands. We're now joined by the chair of the Kimberley Land Council, Anthony Watson. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Anthony.
Yeah, it's been a delight to be hosted by you.
Now, we're speaking to you today as there's a bit of a march coming up soon, and we'll get to that a little bit later, but it's around this proposed Aboriginal Cultural Heritage Bill that the state government has put forward. Before we get into, I guess, some of the issues, potential issues around the bill, can you just start by explaining to our listeners exactly what is this Aboriginal Cultural Heritage Bill?
It's a bill that was made in 1972. And we've been working with it to find that there is a lot of issues with it, and we're looking forward for the changes. But yeah, parts of the drafting still hasn't changed, and it still allows for the industry and for the government to actually destroy a lot of our heritage sites.
And you know, I guess that's something that a lot of our listeners are familiar with, particular, I guess, the recent sort of destruction caused by Rio Tinto. But unfortunately, these, you know, ongoing issues. What are some of the, I guess, some of the concerns that MOB have in regard to this bill and some of the, I guess, the allowances it might cause for mining companies to cause destruction to sites and the environment?
Well, it leaves the decision-making with the industry to determine what is high impact and low impact. So it's a concern for us that they can go ahead and ruin a lot of our areas without engaging with us at towards the destructions that they want to do on our heritage site. So it doesn't leave us at the decision-making process to stop any further destruction like the Juggan Gorge.
Yeah, and I guess talking about that, what's been the process so far in terms of, you know, the state government are proposing these changes and putting more power into the mining companies, but has there been consultation much with the KLC or other traditional landowners or other MOB that will be affected by these by this bill?
Well, yeah, one of the concerns we have with the consultation, it's not a proper process. We want real engagement. The state government has been going on for a number of years, which we rejected on a number of occasions, the proposed bill, and we're still at the helm of wanting to reject these changes because it doesn't have us at the centre of the decision-making over our country.
We're speaking to Anthony Watson, who's the chair of the Kimberley Land Council. Anthony, this there's been a new, somewhat new alliance formed, the WA Alliance of Native Title Representative Bodies and Service Providers, otherwise known just as the WA Alliance. I mean, for me, it seems quite a sort of kind of exciting thing to see a bunch of land councils and others getting together and sort of, you know, trying to voice their opinion on this issue. Can you tell us a bit about that alliance and what you guys have planned in terms of trying to get your, your voices heard and express your concerns to the state government and others?
Yeah, the discussion I've been having at the alliance that we're all disappointed. The consultation process hasn't met or satisfied our needs with the new proposed bill. Coming together to and meeting a traditional owners outside of the alliance is just shows that that consultation process really never took effect. There's a lot of Indigenous people outside the alliance are disappointed. And the Alliance are really disappointed with this new proposed bill.
And I guess one of the issues of this is that, like you're saying, a lot of the decision making will be put in the hands of mining companies that perhaps, you know, are not, well, they're not consulting with MOB and with local people and traditional owners, but also they just don't have the knowledge of these places. And I was reading earlier today about the Aboriginal Cultural Heritage Directory, but how that this, you know, it fails to recognise a lot of, secret and sacred places. Can you tell us a little bit about that and the Aboriginal Cultural Heritage Directory itself and why it's not sufficient at really understanding recognising some of these sacred places?
Yeah, we, as tradition owners, we've got protocols and we just can't put everything up on a Facebook page. They've got a level of security towards what we tell our young fellows and what is exposed to the public. So the directory, we see it as a backward step in wanting to exploit our heritage. And allows company towards wanting to go to areas, but even that is not effective because at the end of the day, they can determine whether it's high or low impact. The minister has the final say in wanting to destroy the site, so there's no guarantee if with this directory process without protection. And I just find it as a, it's not a good exercise to put up.
And just finally, Anthony, there's a bunch of Melbourne and supporters coming together on the 19th of August at Parliament House. Can you tell us a bit about that? There's going to be a march for Aboriginal heritage. Can you tell our listeners about that and I guess how they can support and get involved?
Yes. So on the 19th of August, we're looking at marching towards Parliament. And it'll start at 11, that we're hoping to get everyone at King's Park across the road, get them ready and march on Parliament on 12 o'clock and send a message to the McGowan government that we want to celebrate our heritage being here for many of years, and it needs to stay strong for the future. So we see there's an opportunity to put a strong message to the McGowan government that heritage need to be protected.
We've been speaking to Anthony Watson, who is the chair of the Kimberley Land Council. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us this morning, Anthony.
Yeah, so if you're in Perth, yeah, please come along, get your friends to come along and raise awareness about our message. Other following message that we've got, our KLC Facebook page, our Instagram and information. And so visit the KLC website on www.klc.org.au.
Awesome. Thanks so much, mate.
Thank you.
That was Anthony Watson, who is the chair of the KLC. And that brings us to the end of the Indie Media Show. Very quickly running out of time here. Keep it locked, though, to RTRFM, as after the news, Rhiann Todhunter is coming up with Out to Lunch, all the excellent new additions to the music airwaves here at RTRFM. My name is Raymond. Thanks, Brent, for coming in. And
thanks, Ray.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?